Colin and Shannon on the program for yet another day. And the story, probably the number one story certainly in hockey, mm-hmm. has been one that has been hovering around for months and months now. And that is the Jack Eichel story in Buffalo. The two sides disagreeing on the kind of surgical procedure that Eichel should get. Ultimately, it led to the necessity for Buffalo to look for a trade. Lots of discussion about what his value was, who would be interested. And at the end of it, we don't know the other teams that were involved. The Vegas Golden Knights won the Eichel Derby. There was a lot of speculation that Calgary was in the mix there. Do you know that to be true, Shanny?
Well, I'll tell you what. I talked to a lot of people in Calgary the last couple of days, and I guess when you lose a trade, you downplay how involved you were. So what everybody in the organization has been doing there has been downplaying what they were doing within talking to Kevin Adams with the Sabres. That said, I do believe there where there's smoke, there's fire, and there was some interest from the Flames. However, if you're talking about Calgary, there was no way that Matthew Tkachuk was going the other way. In my opinion, I have my doubts whether Sean Monahan would have gone the other way. So in the end, was there enough prospects within the Flames organization they were prepared to give up? Draft picks or draft picks, but was there enough there for it to be attractive for Buffalo to say to Calgary, yes, that makes sense? So from that perspective, did they kick tires? Yeah, they kicked tires. But
do you think anybody else did?
First of all, we know all along that there are teams in the East that kick tires, but
Buffalo didn't want to trade him to another Eastern team.
Buffalo did not want to trade him to an Eastern Conference team. So that limits you to the 16 on the other side. I think it would be silly to think that people didn't phone Minnesota, St. Louis. I think they all phoned at a certain point, but who knows how much real interest there was when it came to finally doing a deal. In the end, I truly believe the Sabres had one offer on the table, offer, and that was Vegas.
You don't even think Calgary put something on the table?
I don't think they put anything substantial.
Well, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it's a very interesting situation because it's not just a normal trade.
No.
It is a star player.
An injured star player.
Well, with an injury, with a dispute between the team and the player over the kind of procedure that he should get. And it just led to a complete impasse that put the Buffalo Sabres either deliberately or otherwise in a position where they had to make some kind of a move. Whether they wanted to make that move or not, they had to. Mm-hmm. And that took place this week with Jack Eichel going to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Nice shirt, by the way.
There you go. Billy Jaffe of Nesson in Boston and Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, who actually is in Seattle, will join us and we'll try and put the pieces of this situation together, both how it happened and what it means down the road. We'll be back after these messages. It's the trade of the year. I'm not sure has there been another trade this year, Shannon?
If there was, they weren't very big.
Well,
not like this one.
It's pretty big. Jack Eichel goes to Las Vegas, saves himself about $1 million a year in taxes. Oh. And the Buffalo Sabres climb out from under a $10 million burden. And we'll get into all of this stuff and the reasons behind it and the motivation behind it all. Billy Jaffe is with Nesson. He joins us. And Mike Harrington on the road for the Buffalo News covering the Sabres in Seattle. First trip to Seattle, Harrington?
First time since the 2001 ALCS between the Mariners and Yankees.
Wow.
What do you think of the arena?
The arena was spectacular. It was clearly the best in the league. It was unlike any arena I've seen. And the bigger surprise was the crowd. That was a Stanley Cup playoff level crowd. The intensity was off the charts in that game.
Really? You think that will, you think they can keep that going? I mean, that's an interesting aspect. Of course, they've done it in Vegas, right?
Yeah, they have. And I really think that it made an impact on the game when the Sabres took a lead and all of a sudden Seattle came back and got the game tied when Jordan Eberle just blew the roof off the building. I mean, it was actually pretty neat to see the first hat trick in franchise history, a natural, and the hats litter the ice. And, you know, the two Jumbotrons both celebrated, not one Jumbotron. They have two there, and it was terrific.
Okay, so now we've buried the lead a bit. You have been our advocate on our podcast about Jack Eichel. What's going to go happen with Jack Eichel? And it's finally happened. What do you think?
Well, there's a sense of relief, I think, for everyone involved with the Buffalo Sabres, whether you're in the organization, whether you're in the media covering it. We thought this was certainly going to go down over the summer, and here we are in early November, and it was still taking place. I think ultimately Jack got what he wanted. He gets to go to a good team. He gets to go to Vegas. He gets to have his surgery. And it's really the number one thing is this is about the health of a 25-year-old. The Sabres did okay, did about what the best you could expect. They got a first-round pick. They got a legitimate top six NHL forward in Alex Tuch. They got a top prospect in Peyton Krebs. They got another pick. They did okay. They get salary cap relief for now. They can go spend as they want and make trades, more trades, spend over the summer. They've got a lot of room now. It was just time for everyone to move on. The Jack Eichel era didn't work in Buffalo. They never made the playoffs. Not his fault. A lot of other reasons for it. It was time for him to move on. And the fact is the Sabres were on solid legal ground in the CBA regarding his surgery. Their moral ground was certainly withering. This was a 25-year-old who has a neck problem, who needs surgery and needs it now. And it was time to get him somewhere with a team that would allow him to have his choice of surgery, and the Sabres in Vegas got that done.
Okay, Billy, so you've known Jack and seen Jack play since college days. What will this do for Jack Eichel? What will it do for the Golden Knights?
I think he's like Forrest Gump. He's just going to run all the way to Vegas out of excitement. He's just going to keep running and running because he is so happy, John. He is so happy, and I haven't talked to him personally yet. Saw him near the end of the summer. It was clearly evident, my friend, that he needed to get out. We all knew that. And he didn't hide that fact that it had to happen sooner rather than later. It took longer, though. What we'll do for Jack will reinvigorate him, revitalize him. You know, listen, I love going to Buffalo. I used to go to Buffalo all the time, my friend, when I was working with you. Even before that, I was with the old Verses and everything up there all the time. And I love that hockey market and all, but the latest generation of Sabre fans have not had it good. They have not made it attractive up there. And it started, look, you know, Mike was talking about the Jack Eichel era hasn't worked. It started with Tim Murray basically being incredibly disappointed that they got the number two pick instead of the number one Connor McDavid pick. How many years ago was that? And it started with that and it hasn't gotten better. Mike's absolutely right. It isn't Jack's fault they didn't make the playoffs. It was, look at the leadership that they didn't surround him with up there. So it doesn't mean he has no culpability in the matter whatsoever, but it wasn't his primary fault. He is so happy. He is ecstatic to be going there.
But what does this do for Vegas?
Well, it makes them, beg your pardon, it makes them the team that, I said this to somebody the other day, I said, Vegas is the team that has to be in on everything right now. Does that mean you're going to win all the time? No, but they want to be the team that at least makes you think that they're drive the price up for somebody else. They seem to be that. So what does it do for them? If they can get a healthy player back in 4 months, if then they finally get a center that they've been desperately missing there, it makes them better. Now, what do they have rhetorically asking, John? What do they got to do the rest of the lineup? Work? Do they Kucherov it and put somebody on LTIR until the end of the season? Maybe. But if he comes back in, let's say February after the Olympic break, and he can do it and the surgery works, it makes them a significantly better team.
Mike, how good is he really when he's at his prime?
when he's at his prime, he's one of the top 15 players in the league. He was eighth in the Hart Trophy race 2 years ago, ahead of some big names. And to me, and this is, I think, a key point too, this is a good team for Jack to go to, because Jack does not need to be the face of the franchise like in Buffalo, where everything was on his shoulders. He can come in on a team that has Pietrangelo and Pacioretty and Stone and Carlson, and he could be a major piece, but he doesn't have to be the face of everything. And there are other guys around him, other veterans around him, to really help and let Jack go out and play his game. The health thing is going to be a question. If Jack Eichel returns to full health, yeah, he's a superstar, and this is a great setup for him. You have to see how the surgery goes. But I really think that's an underrated part of this trade, is Jack going to a place where he's surrounded by veterans who have won, and no one really in Buffalo has won anything.
But this is a Vegas team that has had difficulty putting the biscuit in the basket. Well, we saw that at the end of the playoffs last year, and we've seen that this year. It is mitigated this year, indeed, because of the injury situation that they've had and the COVID problems. But they need a goal scorer. That's what they need. And he potentially provides them with that. But, Jaffe, how much can you expect from one guy? How much can one guy change a team's offensive performance overall?
Well, the guy that is good as Jack is when he's healthy, Bobby, he can change it an awful lot. Why? Because there's not many guys that can skate like he can. He can push teams back. He has that extension with the puck too. It's elusive. It's amazing, Bob, where, you know, you think you're going to get it from him, yet he extends it real wide, and that opens up time and space for others. I think he can do a lot for them. The caveat, maybe I'll stop saying it, if he's healthy. If he is, because he's, you know, look, he did a lot in Buffalo with very little around him. He had very, very little around him. Skinner had that one huge year, but otherwise wasn't that much around him. I think on the team, and it might not, by the way, happen this year, Bob. It might take a year or so for them to completely gel and get together. And Vegas is going to keep having to tweak the team because of salary cap ramifications. But if they're able to keep a lot of it together, I think he can help them a lot, because of his speed and his ability to create with the puck on his stick.
Does Vegas know there's a salary cap in this league the way they're acting right now? It is pretty funny. I mean,
they got the same memo as Tampa did.
Right. I mean, I looked at it yesterday. It's about $96 million if you count all their LTIR guys. But the other thing, to Billy's point too, what does Jack bring? Bob, the Vegas power play just took three steps up. Jack Eichel is a prime NHL power play point and goal producer, and they've already got some weapons there. But when they throw Jack Eichel on that power play, that is just going to be dynamite for Vegas when he's back.
You know, Mike, you talked about the fact that there won't be pressure on Eichel in Vegas to be the leader. There's enough leadership with, you know, guys like Pietrangelo and Stone and Pacioretty. And listening to Mark Messier yesterday, I'm sure you listened to this too. Mark Messier said the Sabres made a terrible mistake in making him captain. How much of an issue did that become in Buffalo, in and around, not necessarily the way he played, but how much of a secondary issue did that become in Buffalo?
I think in hindsight, it really didn't work well. At the time, you thought it was the right move. A lot of people did. At the time, I really thought the captain of the Buffalo Sabres should have been Ryan O'Reilly. And they didn't go that road. And I think that was one of the reasons why Ryan O'Reilly's love for the game waned and he ended up getting dealt to St. Louis. But Ryan O'Reilly should have been the captain. They should not have thrust that upon Jack at age 20. I think there's pressure right now in this league to do it. Everybody talked about Crosby. Edmonton did it with McDavid. And I think there was a lot of pressure to do that with Jack. I don't think it was the greatest move in the world. I do say this. Jack was pretty accountable publicly after games. When that locker room was empty, after one of the millions of bad losses they had, you would go in there and there would be Jack Eichel sitting at his locker waiting for us to discuss what happened and dissect what happened. And I will always, you know, for the set twos I may have had from time to time with Jack, I will always remember that and give him credit for that. And that was a sign that he understood the role he had been thrust upon.
Okay, so we've done the Vegas side, we've done the Eichel side. The team that traded him did not look very good last night. Not to say that it was going to have a direct influence on a single game or for the next little while. What does this do for the Sabres now, Mike?
Well, the one thing is I kind of last night, you know, they're not real deep, and you take away essentially three of their top six players without Casey Mittelstadt and Henry Okiharu and Victor Olofsson. That's going to have quite an impact. And Rasmus Dahlin is a complete mess right now, and that's another whole story. But the trade itself, Peyton Krebs is really going to be a good prospect. They're starting him in Rochester. They're going to bring him slow. I don't know how long he stays in Rochester. I just think they want to get him into the organization. Alex Tuch is a top six player, maybe a first line player for the Buffalo Sabres. They won't see him for a while, but here's the other thing. You have to wonder right now, after 10 years of missing the playoffs, you want to find guys who are interested in playing for the Buffalo Sabres. And Alex Tuch grew up as a Buffalo Sabres fan outside of Syracuse, grew up two doors down from Tim Connelly, played street hockey in Baldwinsville, New York with Tim Connelly, loved the Buffalo Sabres. That's a perfect guy to get if you're going to get one guy out of Vegas. I got another first round pick, and I think, you know, they don't need the cap relief per se. They got $16 million of space, whatever it is. They needed this over. As much as Don Granato said it's not a distraction, it was going to become a bigger and bigger distraction with every rumor that happened every day. Now that the season is going on, they needed it to end. And as we found out yesterday, Jack was going to start doing the interview tour. They had been very quiet. Well, the interview tour had been set before the trade went down, and there was a lot of pressure being put. Jack needs surgery. He needed this done. It was time for Kevin Adams to just pull the trigger and get it over with.
Billy, one of the things that we look at a lot, we talk a lot about first-round picks, and we do that generically. And I think that's a problem, especially for fans, maybe more so than for guys like us. But this is going to be a 20-something pick, we presume, in the draft. It's not a 1, a 2, 3. It's a 20-something. And it would be a mistake, would it not? A mistake to not quantify or qualify the fact that this first-round pick is not going to likely be an obvious impact player. Is that fair, Jaffe?
I don't know about because I think what's happened in the scouting world now is teams miss on their first-round picks far, far, far less than they used to. I think scouting is so much more developed now, and you go down the list of the draft, there's a lot of first-rounders that don't really pan out, but I think a lot of teams – who win get their second and third round picks right. That's one of Buffalo's problems the last 10 years is they never had anyone come out other than the first round. So I think the way Buffalo works it, they consider first round picks gold. I mean, they got a solid pick at 14 for Ristolainen from Philly. They believe in the power of the draft. And yes, it's not going to be a 1, 2, 3. As a matter of fact, it's a top 10 protected if Vegas falls apart this year. But I think there's a certain value to any first round pick. And even, you know, even go back, Bob, they got a first round pick from St. Louis for O'Reilly, and everyone was, you know, disappointed. They won the Stanley Cup, you know, for a while they were going to be out of the playoffs. They won the Stanley Cup. The pick was number 31. The pick is Ryan Johnson, a defenseman at the University of Minnesota right now, who's an all Big Ten player who definitely projects to be a solid NHL player. And they got him at 31. So I think you can't, in this day and age, undervalue those first round picks.
Billy, was this a litmus test for Kevin Adams?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the whole process was, Shanny. I mean, this was a crash course or, you know, a grad school course for Kevin Adams, and welcome to the fire, so to speak, feet first going in, having to deal with this type of a scenario as general manager. You know, did he pass? I guess finally, it took too long for my liking. I couldn't agree more with Mike about the moralistic end of it. They absolutely had the CBA on their side for this. For somebody, I had my neck fused years ago in 2006. I wasn't playing. I was broadcasting. Some would argue that broadcasting for the Atlanta Thrashers at that time was almost harder than playing for them. Having to talk about it regularly. So
it was certainly a contact sport.
It was, yes, it was. I mean, I had my C6 and 7 fused, and I had to tell you, it was awesome. But it took me 6 to 8 months to get better, and, you know, before I could play you know, the old guy contact hockey again, not NHL action. But listen, they, I don't know, after a while, just like Mike said, you got to get it over with. I wish they had done it before, for Jack's sake, for the league's sake too. I do, for the league's sake, I think it would have looked better. It was a litmus test. One other thing about the draft picks though, guys, too, I believe, right, you said, right, they have three first rounders now scheduled for next season or next off season already.
Right.
You know, one of us, theirs could already end up being the number one overall pick, although Arizona is going to do everything they can to get that. But they could package those as well. They could take two of those to bump up a few spots if they don't, to either get the number one or the number two. So there's options there for sure.
Billy, do you think they're in the play for the number one or number two pick?
Arizona or Buffalo?
Buffalo.
I think when it's all said and done, it's going to be a tough year, Mike. I do. I think it's – I grew up with Donny Granato. I'll bring out my pom-poms right now. And he's awesome. And he's a great coach. And I think, Mike, it's going to end up being a tough year for them because you already mentioned they're missing some players. And I don't know if I see their goaltending be able to – and their D being able to really withstand the post-20-game pump, you know, that the step up. That happens. One thing I say that could save them, and by the way, even if they're not one or two, maybe they're eight, they package their two picks that are in the top 10 and they move up to get to two or three. But the one thing that might help them a little bit, Mike, is the Atlantic is not that strong this year. And so that, you know, they play a fair percentage of their games against the Atlantic.
And that's exactly the point I made about last year. They were terrible last year, but they got the worst deal in the league in realignment. Suddenly, they didn't have any games against Ottawa and Detroit and Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
And every night they played Pittsburgh, Washington, the Islanders. They had and Boston. They had just a juggernaut every single night last year, except when they played New Jersey. So that really kind of turned their season in the wrong way. And I think this year there's been those breaks they need. You know, once in a while, you do get to play Arizona and Anaheim and that. It makes a difference.
We want to take a break. I got at least one more thing to talk about with regard to Eichel, and then we want to address a couple of other things around the National Hockey League. Billy Jaffe, Mike Harrington are with us. We'll come back after these messages. It's McCowan, it's Shannon, it's Billy Jaffe, it's Mike Harrington, who joins us from Seattle on the road again. All right, so... let me just think outside the box a little bit, or maybe I'm not. Buffalo is happy to get what they got. I think we all agree to that.
And to get rid of $10
million. Well, and therein lies the motivation for this. Did the Buffalo Sabres essentially create this scenario that made it look like they didn't really want to trade their star player, but had to because of the disagreement over the surgery? And did they wind up getting exactly what they want without any criticism from guys like Harrington?
Jaffe, I've been pretty critical of them a lot of time.
Well, but not, you know, I mean, you're not today, you know, no. So Jaffe, what do you think? Is there, you know, is this a conspiracy theory or is this got any, is there any validity to this?
Well, conspiracy theories in hockey are fun, Bobby. Keep going, buddy. Keep bringing up more. I mean,
okay, let me throw it to you this way. Yeah. If you're the general manager of the Buffalo Sabres, if you're the ownership of the Buffalo Sabres, did you take the position on the Eichel surgery because you believed it was the right decision, or because you got to the point where you knew that he wanted something else and you went, aha, here's our opportunity.
To
get this deal done, get rid of Eichel, get $10 million off the books and make us look like we're stand-up guys.
There's an ethical issue there when it comes to medicine, Bob. There's an ethical issue there.
Well, what's the issue?
Well, the issue is that the people that, whether it's Roswell Park or whatever hospital in Buffalo that the doctors come from, they're going to say, hey, we want to look after Jack Eichel as a person first before a player.
Right. I think in the post, I don't want to call it mortem, but the post analysis of it, it's an interesting conspiracy to throw out there, but they went through their doctors for, if they worked with their doctors to get to that scenario, Bob, that's a, you want to talk slippery slope. That's one of those things that, you know, if that came out, holy smokes. And the NHL doesn't need another, they don't need another bad black eye right now after everything we've been going through. That would be a very, that would be a ginormous, as one of my kids would say, issue that they have just created.
Okay, so it starts out, let me do the chronological thing here, Harrington, before you jump in. So the Sabres do all their due diligence and they say, okay, this is the procedure that is recommended. Eichel's camp comes back and says, no, we don't want that. We want this other thing.
Artificial.
Now you have a conflict. And that was the conflict between the two parties. Were the Buffalo Sabres happy that this scenario was created? They publicly didn't suggest they were unhappy. They simply said, this is what we, our guys believe is the right way to go. And Eichel wants to go a different way. And we're not going to go that way. But quietly, behind closed doors, were they all chortling and saying, aha, this is our out. This is the way we can trade this guy, get $10 million back on cap space.
I don't think they were chortling in the sense of, you know, oh, this worked out the way with master plan all along. I think they may have said, come to the conclusion, Bob, hey, you know what? We don't know if this is going to work. We don't know if the kid's ever going to play for us again. So you know what? All right, let's move him. Let's realize that the Buffalo Eichel era didn't work. And we do save our money at the same time. I don't think that they said, you know, I don't think they had a Smithers moment there where they rubbed their hands and said, this is the best thing to happen. I don't when it's all said and done.
Harrington, are the Buffalo Sabres chagrined that they had to deal Jack Eichel?
They're not happy about it. Keep in mind, Jack revealed in his interview with Elliot yesterday that he actually asked for a trade before last season. And he was kind of pacified when they went out and got Taylor Hall and Eric Staal. Think they were trying to win again. It's a scenario where the medical teams, you know, some of these medical teams the Sabres have worked with the Bills, have worked with, you know, when Kevin Everett had his spinal surgeries. So these are highly qualified medical people who said the fusion was the best course of action in Jack's case. Jack did his own research. Good for him. This is the road he wanted. He found a team that gave it to him. The cap savings, you know, the Sabres have the lowest cap hit in the league right now. Mm-hmm. Well, they're going to spend money. They might spend some money this year, make another deal. They're going to spend some money eventually. They're going to have to pay some of their young players, essentially. They paid Darlene. They're going to have to pay other people. I just think that it was time to do it differently. Everybody says, oh, they got rid of Eichel and Reinhardt and Ristolainen and McCabe and Ullmark. They didn't win with any of those guys.
Of course, I get, and that's sort of my point that I'm trying to make here. That maybe quietly
they didn't win.
They didn't want to. They wanted to change direction. And here presented to them on a platter, not maybe by their own creation, but on a platter was, aha, here's a way to make some change.
But they told Jack that, Bob. They told Jack, we're looking at a rebuild. If Jack had said to them last year, you know what? I'll be the face again. I'll be the captain. We're going to rebuild. We're going to have Cousins and Mittelstadt and Darlene, and we're going to get Owen Power and these guys, and I'm going to run the rebuild. Jack would still be here. They presented the rebuild to Jack, and Jack said, I want out. And they said, we understand.
Yeah. Hey, we heard lots of stories. Calgary was kicking tires. Carolina was kicking tires. Truthfully, what kind of market was out there for Jack Eichel? Mike?
Oh, it would have been a massive market had he been healthy. Because had he been healthy,
well, no, sure. but he wasn't.
But he wasn't. Had he been healthy, they would have traded him no problem. It would have been a bidding war beyond belief. The issue was the health. The issue to me was not the $10 million cap hit over the summer. A lot of teams could have taken that. The issue was, can we get a guy with 5 years left in his deal with a $10 million hit who isn't healthy? And that really truncated what market there was for Jack. Vegas was in it the whole time because they're in it for everybody. And then we know that Calgary was in late. And I don't know, there's a lot of talk of Carolina. I think Carolina was just lurking to see, like they always do, if they get something on the cheap. But there wasn't the market for Jack Eichel that there would have been simply because of the health.
Right.
Well, as the one guy who's had a similar kind of surgery, Jaffe, what do you know, I mean, I know you before you had the procedure, you talked to doctors, you assessed mm-hmm. the risk, you had an understanding. I think all of us who have had surgery, we tend, and when you're getting it, you start asking a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And you want to know, what are the risks? What are the ramifications, blah, blah, blah. What do you think the risk here is of Jack Eichel either not playing again or being a risk, an injury risk for a prolonged period of time?
Well, I can only speak, though, Bob, to the fusion. And I can tell you that two things. One, right away, within hours, I had tremendous relief. I had it pretty significant where my right arm started to go dead. I couldn't even hold up a microphone. That was finally after 6 injections into my back spine over about 12 to 14 months, the max you could do. I'm like, all right, I got to get this done. Let alone playing hockey. You know, I was still playing at a fun stuff, but I couldn't hold a microphone. So I'm like, all right, I'm screwed. So I had to do it. I had immediate relief, but it still took me really another 8 months before I could get, you know, I rode the bike at 3 months, but playing hockey at a rum-dum level, as I like to call it, took me a long time till it was all healed and everything. I can't speak to the artificial disc for a pro athlete situation, what kind of risk he is. I just don't know. I'm not educated for that. And my guess is that there's going to be a pretty good chance that he's going to be okay. Just how much medicine, technology, everything has gotten better. I just came off of I'm 7 weeks out of having my right shoulder completely redone, from full bicep tendon reset to my rotator cuff to my AC joint. And it's amazing. Now, I'm still 4 months away from, again, being able to get after things, but I'm going to guess that he's got a very good chance of being okay when it's all said and done. But the problem is, Bob, when you talk about being the first NHL player, maybe even pro athlete ever to have it done and then have exactly. to go through it, that's where your shorts get a little tight if you're a team.
What we do know with the ADR is that MMA fighters, believe it or not, MMA, there are six at least high-level mixed martial arts fighters have had the artificial disc replacement. But no player, no athlete in the big four sports has had it.
Mm-hmm. That was a big factor. I think a lot of teams are like, hey, and the Sabres got agreement from teams. We can let our fourth line plug go get a surgery that's never been done on an NHL player. We're not letting our $10 million first line center be the first guinea pig. I think that was a big factor.
But Vegas is willing to take that chance.
They are.
But that speaks to that. And we've had George on multiple times. That speaks to the attitude of the franchise. And that starts with Bill Foley. That starts with Bill Foley saying, I want to win. And you guys give me a chance to win. I want to win, and we will take risks.
I would argue, my friend, John, that it starts with where the team is located. You can't be a conservative team and be in Vegas. You've got to be brash, aggressive. You've got to literally be willing to gamble if you are in Vegas, I think. That's part of the attitude. I know you can't – I'm not being flippant here, but – I guess I am being a little flippant. But you know what? The team – personality personifies the city with which it resides.
Well, and nobody knows the market better than Mr. Foley, right? Let's face it. More than McPhee, more than McCrimmon, Bill Foley knows the market.
Well, they've taken the big risk, and it'll be several months before we find out whether that risk has pays dividends or not. Couple minutes before we let you guys go, we're still very, very early in this season, and inevitably, there are teams who jump out of the gate hot and teams that come out of the gate and fall flat on their face. Who in that group can't sustain it, and who might be able to sustain it? Are there surprising teams, both positively and negatively, that you think might prove to be as good or as bad as they have been so far? Either one of you jump in if you think of somebody.
Well, I'm just floored. I'm floored by the Chicago situation. Not everything off the ice. That obviously is a whole other story here. But you have some young players there. You still have Patrick Kane. You go out and you make moves. You bring in Marc-Andre Fleury. You bring in Seth Jones. And they are terrible. And I think Jeremy Colliton, with all the chaos of the organization, has been saved right now because of that. If none of that had been going on, they'd have already changed coaches. They'd had to have a sacrificial lamb there. But that team, and they even got Jonathan Toews back. It's mind-boggling to me. One of the big stories this year on the ice, the Chicago Blackhawks, is how bad they are.
I never thought, though, that they would make the playoffs. That's just my, you know, we have to pick them here on the NHL Network and everything. And I know they got Seth Jones. I've looked at his play the last 2 years. I still think, obviously, he's a great defense, but $9.5 million, that deal that he signed was, oh my God. And I don't remember, John, if we talked, and Bob, if we talked on your show, I know I was on a few months ago about that. I don't remember, but crazy to me. But the teams, a couple of teams jump out to me. San Jose is staying in the, we'll call it the playoff race. I know we're 10 games in. I don't see San Jose being able to sustain this whatsoever. I just don't. I'll give Anaheim a little credit for having a little more energy there. I don't see that sustainable. And the team in the West that's going to have to be better, and they will, is Colorado. I'm not as convinced, though, that they're surefire Stanley Cup as some people thought maybe. I mean, I still like them, but they'll be better. The team in the East that I'm looking at, besides Buffalo, and I don't think Buffalo will, again, will stand. We already discussed that, but is the Columbus Blue Jackets. I'm impressed by them. I was with the Atlanta Thrashers organization when Brad Larson was there. You want to talk about a real kind of do it on his own, do it my way, complete will over skill type of guy. He seems to be the type of guy that gets the most out of his players too, Bob and John. And I think that it's kind of resonating there. He's different than, even though he was with Torts for a long time, he's very different than Torts is. Although players will always tell you that more or less they love Torts, the way mm-hmm. that he treats them, but coaching style, Lars treats them a little bit differently. But that's a team that I look at and I'm like, okay, can they withstand this? Can they really stay in the playoff race? I don't know if they can, Bob, being in the Metropolitan. It's a really good deep division.
What about the Bruins?
Just really? Lost Liney today too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Just lost Liney
today. What about the Bruins? I mean, Bergeron gets four, answers to a lot of critics. Are the Bruins, are they any good?
They're good. I think they're good. I don't know if they're great right now. They're not great right now. They're good. They're interesting in the sense that I people talk about, well, they don't have Tuukka Rask. Like, by the way, Tuukka Rask is healing up really well and he's already skating. And he's looking good. So could he come back? Sure. Where are the Bruins going to be in a month and a half when he might be close? I don't know. You know, I don't have the crystal ball, but that could be an interesting, or will be an interesting storyline. We can talk in, say, 6 weeks or so again. I think the Bruins issue, Shanny, when it's all said and done, is their D group. Because McAvoy is excellent. They brought in Forbert. But he's really he's a guy who can ride the elevator up and down. And he's really a stay-at-home, simple third-pair guy, but can elevate up when need be here and there. But after that, they got Carlo on the right side. And I just don't know if their D has enough size and grit and depth to withstand when things are on a long run, when it's all said and done. So that's an area that they're going to have to address. The Haula line, which has Jake DeBrusk on the left side and, in theory, Nick Foligno on the right. Right now, Curtis Lazar on the right. And I know you and I, Shanny, have talked about Lazar. I'm a fan of his. I am. I'm a real fan. I know Mike had him in Buff a bit, or watched him in Buff a bit there too. But that's been actually pretty good. But to me, it's Hall, Coyle, and Craig Smith. If that second line can really get going, then the Bruins' depth up front is really nice. It's the back end where I'm looking at me like, I'm not sure when all said and done.
On the positive side, Florida and Carolina. Florida's played 10 games, haven't been beaten in regular time. Carolina's played 9 and are 9-0. I think we all liked those two teams at the beginning of the year, but I dare say none of us probably picked them to win a Stanley Cup. And 1/8 of the season gone, we're probably not going to change our minds there. But both of those teams look good. I mean, they're not just playing well. You can make a case now that this isn't completely shocking. Harrington,
well, and your head. Let's remember the curveball that Florida has had to face, and that's the loss of their coach. Drew Burnett's behind the bench now. And the question now becomes for Bill Zito, does he replace Burnett? Does he go and find somebody? Does he let Andrew do the rest of the way?
Well, I don't think they replace him as long as they keep winning.
Players love Bruno. I've known Bruno since we were both part of the mighty Atlanta Thrashers organization. Well, I can tell
this
you.
This is the most Thrashers we've ever
isn't
heard.
It? On isn't it? This is unbelievable. I yearn for my shrimp and grits and my waffles and chicken.
Let's mention Don Waddell in Carolina then. Okay.
That's right.
There you go.
But Bruno is the type of guy, Bob, that they are playing for there. The players love, and they have another guy there. Sorry, another Thrash and Florida Panther and Derek McKenzie. And they love D-Mac. I don't know if that's going to be, and I'm rooting for Bruno, but that's a big ask when you get to playoff time. Holy smokes, you know, to put a guy like that, you know, with not a lot of experience as a head, none experience behind the bench, but that will be a huge decision there. I like both those teams. They're big, they're long, they play, they've got great depth, they play fast, all those things. I would say I think Carolina is closer due to their playoff experiences the last few years. I know Tampa and Florida had an awesome experience last year, but I still think Florida might need one more, oh, we were good, but not good enough experience. Carolina's on the precipice. Is Freddie Anderson good enough to lead them there? That's the question.
Or good enough in the playoffs in the postseason to take them somewhere, that's maybe more accurately. Well, and you mentioned the name Tortorella. I mean, when the Quenneville situation happened, I know I mentioned it and I was not alone. A whole bunch of people started going. You don't see that happening?
Won't happen. Will not happen.
You need to bring in a guy, I think, that is a player's coach that, like Joel loves the horses, right? He likes watching them run. He also loves watching his players play. He likes having them get the puck, move the puck. He doesn't want them, gritty and bear down and this. And by the way, Torts, again, his players really enjoy him an awful lot. But I think stylistically, you need to bring somebody in a lot closer to Joel Quenneville than you do John Tortorella style.
Agree, Harrington?
Yeah, Florida is a team. They got some horses. They got some thoroughbreds there. That's not a Tortorella team at all. So when I heard that rumor, I was like, boy, it doesn't seem like a fit to me at all.
Bruce Boudreaux's more of a fit.
Absolutely.
I would say
Boudreaux's more of a fit.
Well, that's interesting.
I think at this point, be right, Bob, I think the biggest thing is, you know, you got to keep with what you got. If he's going to keep winning, you got to keep Andrew in there. I mean, if they're going to keep winning hockey games, why would you change? I mean,
I agree with that. I think
you can't put him on
the bubble's going to burst.
You can't put him on that term of saying, okay, if you lose two in a row, we're going to get rid of you. That becomes the real issue. Here's the thing. Was it 9-0-1? They have a system that's working. They have a group of players that's working. Don't change a darn thing. So let Andrew run with it for this year. Let him run with it.
Okay. If you look at that lineup,
Barkov is the best superstar no one knows.
Yes. Yes. Sorry. I'd agree.
Barkov is the best superstar in this league. People don't talk about enough.
Right.
And you got a guy like that in the middle of your lineup. That's the guy.
Real quickly, before we let you guys wander off, Edmonton playing the way they are, not shocking. You were hoping, you're expecting that at some point they might break through, and it appears they might be at that point right now of emerging as a really good hockey team. And Calgary, while they've lost 3 overtime games, are 6-1 in regulation time. That's pretty surprising, or is it? Either of you?
Yeah. It is to me. Calgary's depth is impressive to me. I thought they'd be okay. I didn't expect them to be this good, Bob. But I feel like Darryl, I think with the assistance of bringing in Kirk Muller, they've really implemented all for one, one for all attitude there. And I didn't look in the last 2 games lineup, so forgive me if I'm wrong. Please don't chastise me. Is Monahan still on the so-called fourth line center? I didn't see if he's in that slot or not, but it doesn't really matter if they're all generating chances, and they're all in it together. But that what it comes down to is the depth of the team has been very impressive to me, and their goaltending.
They needed Eichel. They needed Eichel. Calgary getting Eichel would have really been a boost.
Yeah.
Well, assuming Eichel is going to be anywhere near the former Eichel, and it's going to be sometime, probably March, before we see Jack Eichel in an NHL uniform. I think that's sort of the time frame here. Maybe mid-February, if lucky.
Oh, actually, quick question, yes or no for both of you. Billy, if Jack Eichel's ready in 3 months, if you're Kelly McCrimmon, do you let him go to the Olympics?
If he hasn't played, no. Mike? If he has played, yes.
No, but he's played one game.
No, I don't think so. No.
I agree. And Harrington's shaking his head for those of you who are listening. So I assume he agrees with that assessment. Boys, off you go. Have a great day. We thank you, as always, for taking a few moments for us. Safe travels to Chicago, Mr. Harrington. And Mr. Jaffe, take care of all your physical ailments and all your recent and not so recent surgeries. We wish you a speedy
recovery. Come to me for all medical questions. I've had too many.
And try to improve your likability factor, please.
Yeah, that'd be good. We have so much crap that we could talk about, Shanny, by the way. I need to get speaking of Mr. Likeability.
All that for another day. Thank you, boys. We'll talk soon. Jaffe and Harrington, we'll come back after these messages. Our thanks to Billy Jaffe and Mike Harrington for joining us, and especially to Harrington. We didn't mention this during the course of the interview. In fact, I didn't know. It was just during the commercial break that Shannon told me. I mean, I know for a lot of you it's not a big deal, but Mike Harrington actually switched his flight from Seattle to Chicago just to be on this podcast.
Yeah. Well, he's become our regular Buffalo correspondent.
Yeah.
You know, and he's one of the best. He's a great writer. It's funny how, you know, Bob, our affinity, yours and mine, with people in Buffalo, dating back to the late, great Jim Kelly. And in many ways for me, Mike has inherited that mantle from Jim as the guy of record in hockey in Western New York. So it was when I talked to Mike about joining us, he said, give me 5 minutes. And next thing you know, he's available. So we're in great debt to Mike for doing what he did today.
Yeah. And I'm sure the audience appreciates it as much as, well, maybe not as much as we do, but nonetheless, we thank him.
But by the way, the Eichel trade, to me, the first thing that happened when you ended up getting these types of parts, two players, Krebs and Tuck, draft picks, the first trade that came to mind for me was, is this going to be 2021's version eventually of the Eric Lindros trade? Is it going to be that? And if you look
at the Quebec Philadelphia deal,
correct. That was five parts. It wasn't necessarily a money deal because money wasn't an issue for either team at that point. Eric just didn't want to play in Quebec City. But if you remember, what happened was it was a huge boost to what the Flyers did. In fact, some would say that Eric's role in Philadelphia was that he helped them build a new arena there, the house that Eric built, which is now, the Wells Fargo Center. And then the parts that Quebec, Colorado got included Peter Forsberg and a few other parts that helped them win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
So that's the first trade I thought of. I know it may not be completely accurate, but to me, when you think of the magnitude of a superstar player getting traded, the Lindros trade was the one that jumped out to me.
It's really an interesting, I'm just thinking about it now. We hadn't talked about this before. Lindros was, 18 years old?
Yes.
At the time.
Yeah.
He had just been drafted.
Correct.
He was drafted by Quebec. He didn't want to go play in Quebec.
Right.
And they had to execute this deal.
Well, in fact, Marcelo Booth traded him twice, once to the Rangers and once to the Flyers.
Yeah.
And then it had to go to an arbitration to say the Flyers won the trade.
But Lindros was a prospect, a high prospect, as good a player probably as has come out of junior. I don't know the best, if he's the best ever, but he was really, really
he was up there, Bob. I mean, he played at the Olympics for Canada before he played in the NHL.
Exactly. I mean, just to put it in context for younger people who may not know how good he was expected to be. And he turned out to be pretty much as advertised.
Until concussions.
Right. By comparison, Eichel, real good player, but not expected to be Lindros. And the first few years of his of Eichel's play in the National Hockey League, really good.
Oh yeah.
But not Lindros.
I don't know, Bob.
Maybe
that's a subjective thing. That's very subjective. I mean, we're talking about the guy who, in any other year, would have been the first pick overall.
Well, yeah, but I don't think he was never the best player in the National Hockey League.
No, top five though. Mike said it. He thought he was a top 15 player. I do think at a certain point, maybe the year before, so two and a half years ago, he was top five player in the league.
Maybe. Okay. I mean, I'm not giving it to you, but okay. I'm not going to deny it. But Lindros was a dominant player, an impact player almost from the get-go. Now, he went to a Philadelphia team that had a lot more ammunition around Lindros than Eichel did, without question.
Well, they were both out of the playoffs. They were both fighting Buffalo and Philadelphia at that point. Philadelphia was not very good when Eric showed up. Eric was a difference maker.
Well, I'll give you anyway, that. So. But he was a difference maker, and Eichel hasn't been a difference maker.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. You're bang on. But it's an interesting. You wonder if it will work out that way, and we can look back in 3 or 4 years and say, well, Eichel trade, last one like that was the Lindros trade.
Well, we'll see. And the key to making that analysis is Eichel's got to play for an extended period of time. And we hope he can. Mm-hmm. But there is reason for some doubt as to what he'll be able to do if and when he comes back. That'll do it for us. We thank you all for stopping by. And if the creek don't rise, we'll see you again next week. Goodbye, John. Have a nice weekend.
You too, Robert.
That'll do it for us. Goodbye, everybody.